His one eye, containing the grey view, began to cry, drowning in tears. The train jerked. A noise of metal tearing came from behind. He was almost thrown from the seat. He had to grab the edge of the seat, then lean forward and take the power lever again as it flicked back to the off position. The roaring in his head grew and grew. He was shaking with exhaustion and excitement. He pushed the lever again. Wreckage blocked one door. Welding gear hung under the reactor car. Strips of metal torn from the train's hull were splayed out like stray hairs from a badly groomed coat. Lumps of debris littered the tracks by the sides of both access gantries, and one whole ramp, where Zakzal had been buried for a while, had crashed through the side of a carriage when it had been cut free. Groaning and moaning, as though its own attempts at movement were as painful as Quernall's had been, the train lurched forward again. It moved half a turn of its wheels, then stopped, as the jammed ramp stuck against the access gantry. A whining noise came from the train motors. In the control deck, alarms sounded, almost too high for the injured Idiran to hear. Meters flashed, needles climbed into danger zones, screens filled with information. The ramp started to tear itself free from the train, crumpling a jagged-edged trench from the carriage surface as the train slowly forced its way forward. Quernall watched the lip of the tunnel mouth edge closer. More wreckage ground against the forward access gantry. The welding gear under the reactor car scraped along the smooth floor until it came to the lip of stone surrounding an inspection trough. It jammed, then broke, clattering to the bottom of the trough. The train rammed slowly forward. With a grinding crash, the ramp caught on the rear access assembly, fell free, snapping aluminium ribs and steel tubes, flaying the aluminium and plastic skin of the carriage it had lodged in. One corner of the ramp was nudged under the train, covering a rail. The wheels hesitated at it, the linkages between the cars straining until the slowly gathering onward pull overcame the ramp. It buckled, its structures compressing, and the wheels rolled over it, thumping down on the far side and continuing along the rail. The next wheels clattered over it with hardly a pause. Quernall sat back. The tunnel came to the train and seemed to swallow it. The view of the station slowly disappeared. Dark walls slid gently by on either side of the control deck. The train still shuddered, but it was slowly gathering speed. A series of bangs and crashes told Quernall of the carriages dragging their way after him, through the debris, over the shining rails, past the wrecked gantries, out of the damaged station. The first car left at a slow walking pace, the next a little faster, the reactor carriage at a fast walk, and the final car at a slow run. Smoke tugged after the departing train, then drifted back and rose to the roof again. The camera in Station 6, where they had had the firefight, where Dorolo and Nysin had died and the other Adiran had been left for dead, was out of action. Horza tried the switch a couple of times, but the screen stayed dark. A damage indicator winked. Horza flicked quickly through the views from the other stations on the circuit, then switched the screen off. "Well, everything seems to be all right." He stood up. "Let's get back to the train." Yalsin told Wobslin and the drone. Balveda slipped off the big seat, and with her in the lead, they walked out of the control room. Behind them, a power monitoring screen, one of the first Horza had switched on, was registering a massive energy drain in the locomotive supply circuits, indicating that somewhere, in the tunnels of the command system, a train was moving. Chapter 13. The Command System. Terminus.
"One can read too much into one's own circumstances. I'm reminded of one race who set themselves against us, oh, long ago now, before I was even thought of. Their conceit was that the galaxy belonged to them, and they justified this heresy by a blasphemous belief concerning design. They were aquatic, their brain and major organs housed in a large central pod, from which several large arms or tentacles protruded. These tentacles were thick at the body, thin at the tips and lined with suckers. Their water god was supposed to have made the galaxy in their image. You see? They thought that because they bore a rough physical resemblance to the great lens that is the home of all of us, even taking the analogy as far as comparing their tentacle suckers to globular clusters, it therefore belonged to them. For all the idiocy of this heathen belief, they had prospered and were powerful, quite respectable adversaries, in fact."
"Avager said. Without looking up, he asked,
What were they called?
Zoxal rumbled. Their name.
The Adiran pondered.
I believe they were called the Fanch.
Never heard of them, Avija said.
No, you wouldn't have, Zoxal purred. We annihilated them.
Yalsin saw Horza staring at something on the floor near the doors leading back to the station. She kept watching Balveda but said, What have you found? Horza shook his head, reached to pick something from the floor, then stopped. I think it's an insect, he said incredulously. Wow, Yalsin said, unimpressed. Balveda moved over to have a look, Yalsin's gun still trained on her. Horza shook his head, watching the insect crawl over the tunnel floor. What the hell's that doing down here? He said. Yalsin frowned when he said that, worried at a note of near panic in the man's voice. Probably brought it down ourselves, Balveda said, rising. Hitched a ride on the pallet or somebody's suit, I'll bet. Horza brought his fist down on the tiny creature, squashing it, grinding it into the dark rock. Balveda looked surprised. Yalsin's frown deepened. Horza stared at the mark left on the tunnel floor, wiped his glove, then looked up, apologetic. Sorry, he told Balveda, as though embarrassed. Couldn't help thinking about that fly in the Ends of Invention. Turned out to be one of your pets, remember? He got up and walked quickly into the station. Balveda nodded, looking down at the small stain on the floor. Well, she said, arching one eyebrow, that was one way of proving its innocence. Zoxal watched the male and the two females come back into the station.
Nothing, little one? He asked.
Lots of things, section leader, Horza replied, going up to Zoxal and checking the wires holding him. Zoxal grunted.
They're still somewhat tight, ally.
What a shame, Horza said. Try breathing out. Ha! Zoxal laughed and thought the man might have guessed. But the human turned away and said to the old man who'd been guarding him, Avija, we're going onto the train. Keep our friend company. Try not to fall asleep. Fat chance of them gibbering all the time, the old man grumbled. The other three humans entered the train. Zoxal went on talking. In one section of the train, there were lit map screens which showed how Shah's world had looked at the time the command system had been built. The cities and the states shown on the continents, the targets on one state on one continent, the missile grounds, air bases, and naval ports belonging to the system's designers shown on another state on another continent. Two small ice caps were shown, but the rest of the planet was steppe, savanna, desert, forest, and jungle. Balveda wanted to stay and look at the maps, but Horza pulled her away and through another door going forward to the nose of the train. He switched off the lights behind the map screens as he went, and the bright surface of blue oceans, green, yellow, brown, and orange land, blue rivers and red cities and communication lines faded slowly into grey darkness. Uh-oh, there are more on the train. Three, I think, walking from the rear. Now what? Zoxal breathed in, breathed out. He flexed his muscles and the wires slipped over his keratin plates. He stopped when the old man wandered over to look at him.
You are Avijir, aren't you? That's what they call me, the old man said.
He stood looking at the Adiran, gazing from Zoxal's 3 feet with their three slab toes and round ankle collars, over his padded-looking knees, the massive girdle of pelvic plates and the flat chest, up to the section leader's great saddle head, the broad face tipped and looking down at the human beneath.
Frightened I'll escape, Zoxal rumbled.
Avijir shrugged and gripped his gun a little tighter.
What do I care? He said. I'm a prisoner too. That madman's got us all trapped down here. I just want to go back. This isn't my war. A very sensible attitude, Zoxal said. I wish more humans would realize what is and what is not theirs, especially regarding wars.
I don't suppose your lot are any better.
Let us say different, then.
Say what you like. Avijir looked over the Adiran's body again, addressing Zoxal's chest. I just wish everybody would mind their own business. I see no change, though. It'll all end in tears.
I don't think you really belong here, Avijir.
Zoxal nodded wisely, slowly. Avijir shrugged and did not raise his eyes. I don't think any of us do.
The brave belong where they decide.
Some harshness entered the Adiran's voice. Avijah looked at the broad, dark face above him.
Well, you would see that, wouldn't you?
He turned away and walked back toward the pallet. Zogzal watched and vibrated his chest quickly, tensing his muscles, then releasing. The wires on him slipped a little further. Behind his back, he felt the bonds around one wrist slacken fractionally. The train gathered speed. The controls and screens looked dim to him, so he watched the lights on the tunnel walls outside. They had slid by gently at first, passing the side windows of the broad control deck more slowly than the quiet tide of his breathing. Now, there were two or three lights running by for each time he breathed. The train was pushing him gently in the back, drawing him toward the rear of the seat and anchoring him there. Blood, a little of it, not much, had dried under him, sticking him there. His course, he felt, was set. There was only one thing left to do. He searched the console, cursing the darkness gathering behind his eye. Before he found the circuit breaker on the collision brake, he found the lights. It was like a little present from God. The tunnel ahead flashed with bright reflections as the train's nose headlights clicked on. The double set of rails glinted, and in the distance he could see more shadows and reflections in the tunnel walls, where access tubes slanted in from the foot tunnels and blast doors ribbed the black rock walls. His sight was still going, but he felt a little better for being able to see outside. At first he worried, in a distant, theoretical way, that the lights might give too much warning, should he be lucky enough to catch the human still in the station. But it made little difference. The air pushed in front of the train would warn them soon enough. He raised a panel near the power control lever and peered at it. His head was light. He felt very cold. He looked at the circuit breaker and then bent down, jamming himself between the rear of the seat, cracking the blood seal beneath him and starting to bleed again, and the edge of the console. He shoved his face against the edge of the power control lever, then took his hand away and gripped the collision brake failsafe. He moved his hand so that it would not slip out, then just lay there. His one eye was high enough off the console to see the tunnel ahead. The lights were coming faster now. The train rocked gently, lulling him. The roaring was fading from his ears, like the sight dimming, like the station behind slipping away and vanishing, like the seemingly steady, slow, quickening stream of lights flowing by on either side. He could not estimate how far he had to go. He had started it off. He had done his best. No more, finally, could be asked of him. He closed his eye, just to rest. The train rocked him.
It's great!
Wubslin grinned when Hawser, Yelsin and Balveda walked onto the control deck. It's all ready to roll, all systems go!
Well, don't wet your pants,
Yelsin told him, watching Balveda sit down in a seat, then sitting in another herself. We might have to use the transit tubes to get around. Hawser pressed a few buttons, watching the readouts on the train systems. It all looked, as Wubslin had said, ready to go.
Where's that damn drone? Hawser said to Yelsin.
Drone? Unaha Clasp?
Yelsin said into her helmet mic.
What is it now?
Unaha Clasp said.
Where are you?
I'm taking a good look through this antiquated collection of rolling stock. I do believe these trains may actually be older than your ship.
Tell it to get back here, Hawser said. He looked at Wubslin. Did you check this whole train?
Yelsin ordered the drone back as Wubslin nodded and said, all of it except the reactor car. Couldn't get into bits of it.
Which are the door controls?
Hawser looked around for a moment, recalling the layout of the train controls. That lot.
He pointed at one of the banks of buttons and light panels to one side of Wubslin. The engineer studied them.
Ordered back. Told to return, like it was a slave, one of the Adiran's Mejel, as though it was a machine. Let them wait a little.
Unaha Clasp had also found the map screens in the train just down the tunnel. It floated in the air in front of the coloured expanses of backlit plastic. It used its manipulating fields to work the controls, turning on small sets of lights which indicated the targets on both sides, the major cities and military installations. All of it dust now. All of their precious humanoid civilization ground to junk under glaciers or weathered away by wind and spray and rain and frozen in ice. All of it. Only this pathetic maze tomb left.
So much for their humanity, or whatever they chose to call it, thought Unaha Clasp. Only their machines remained. But would any of the others learn? Would they see this for what it was, this frozen rock ball? Would they indeed? Unaha Klosp left the screens glowing and floated out of the train back through the tunnel toward the station itself. The tunnels were bright now, but no warmer, and to Unaha Klosp it seemed as though there was a sort of revealed heartlessness about the harsh yellow-white light which streamed from ceilings and walls. It was operating theatre light, dissection table light. The machine floated through the tunnels, thinking that the Cathedral of Darkness had become a glazed arena, a crucible. Zoxal was on the platform, still trussed against the access ramp girders. Unaha Klosp didn't like the way the Adirond looked at it when it appeared from the tunnels. It was almost impossible to read the creature's expression, if he could be said to have one. But there was something about Zoxal that Unaha Klosp didn't like. It got the impression the Adirond had just stopped moving or doing something he didn't want to be seen doing. From the tunnel mouth, the drone saw Avager look up from the pallet where he was sitting, then look away again, without even bothering to wave. The changer and the two females were in the train control area with the engineer, Webslin. Unaha Klosp saw them and went forward to the access ramps and the nearest door. As it got there, it paused. Air moved gently. Hardly anything. But it was there. It could feel it. Obviously, with the power on, some automatic systems were circulating more fresh air from the surface or through atmospheric scrubbing units. Unaha Klosp went into the train.
"Unpleasant little machine, that," Zoxal said to Avager.
The old man nodded vaguely. Zoxal had noticed that the man looked at him less when he was speaking to him. It was as though the sound of his voice reassured the human that he was still tied there, safe and sound, not moving. On the other hand, talking, moving his head to look at the human, making the occasional shrugging motion, laughing a little, gave him excuses to move and so to slip the wires a little further. So he talked. With luck, the others would be on the train for a while now, and he might have a chance to escape. He would lead them a merry dance if he got away into the tunnels with a gun. "Well, they should be open," Hauser was saying. According to the console in front of him and Wubslin, the doors in the reactor car had never been locked in the first place. "Are you sure you were trying to open them properly?" He was looking at the engineer. "Of course," Wubslin said, sounding hurt. "I know how different types of lock work. I tried to turn the recessed wheel, catches off. Okay, this arm of mine isn't perfect, but, well, it should have opened." "Probably a malfunction," Hauser said. He straightened, looking back down the train, as though trying to see through the 100 meters of metal and plastic between him and the reactor car. There's not enough room there for the mind to hide, is there? Wubslin looked up from the panel. "I wouldn't have thought so."
"Well, here I am,"
Unaha Klosp said testily, floating through the door to the control deck. "What do you want me to do now?"
"You took your time searching that other train," Hauser said, looking at the machine.
"I was being thorough. More thorough than you, unless I misheard what you were saying before I came in. Where might there be enough room for the mind to hide?"
"The reactor car," Wubslin said. "I couldn't get through some of the doors. Hauser says, according to the controls, they ought to be open."
"Shall I go back and have a look, then?" Unaha Klosp turned to face Hauser. The changer nodded.
"If it isn't asking too much," he said levelly.
"No, no," Unaha Klosp said airily, backing off through the door it had entered by. "I'm starting to enjoy being ordered about. Leave it to me." It floated away, back through the front carriage toward the reactor car. Valveda looked through the armoured glass at the rear of the train in front, the one the drone had been looking through. "If the mind was hiding in the reactor car, wouldn't it show up on your mass sensor? Or would it be confused with the trace from the pile?" She turned her head slowly to look at the changer.
"Who knows?" Hauser said. "I'm not an expert on the workings of the suit, especially now it's damaged."
"You're getting very trusting, Hauser," the culture agent said, smiling faintly. "Letting the drone do your hunting for you."
"Just letting it do some scouting, Valveda," Hauser said, turning away and working at some more of the controls.
He watched screens and dials and meters, changing displays and readout functions, trying to tell what was going on, if anything, in the reactor car. It all looked normal, as far as he could tell, though he knew less about the reactor systems than about most of the train's other components from his time as a sentinel.
"Okay," Yalsa said, turning her chair to one side, putting her feet upon the edge of one console and taking her helmet off.
"So what do we do if there's no mind there in the reactor car? Do we all start touring round in this thing, take the transit tube, or what?"
"I don't know that taking a mainline train is a good idea," Hauser said, glancing at Wubslin. "I considered leaving everybody else here and taking a transit tube by myself on a circular journey right round the system, trying to spot the mind on the suit mass sensor. It wouldn't take too long, even doing it twice to cover both sets of tracks between stations. The transit tubes have no reactors, so we wouldn't get any false echoes to interfere with the sensors' readings. Wubslin, sitting in the seat which faced the train's main controls, looked downcast.
"Why not send the rest of us back to the ship, then?" Balveda said.
Hawser looked at her. "Balveda, you are not here to make suggestions.
Just trying to be helpful?" The culture agent shrugged. "What if you still can't find anything?" Yalson asked.
"We go back to the ship," Hawser said, shaking his head. "That's about all we can do. Wubslin can check the suit mass sensor on board, and depending on what we find is wrong with it, we might come back down or we might not. Now the power's on, none of that should take very long or involve any hard slog."
"Pity," Wubslin said, fingering the controls. "We can't even use this train to get back to Station 4 because of that train in Station 6 blocking the way."
"It probably would still move," Hawser told the engineer. "We'll have to do some shunting whichever way we go if we use the mainline trains."
"Oh, well then," Wubslin said a little dreamily and looked over the controls again. He pointed at one of them. "Is that the speed control?"
Hawser laughed, crossing his arms and grinning at the man. "Yes, we'll see if we can arrange a little journey." He leaned over and pointed out a couple of other controls, showing Wubslin how the train was readied for running. They pointed and nodded and talked. Yalson stirred restlessly in her seat. Finally, she looked over at Balveda. The culture woman was looking at Hawser and Wubslin with a smile. She turned her head to Yalson, sensing her gaze, and smiled more widely, moving her head fractionally to indicate the two men and raising her eyebrows. Yalson reluctantly grinned back and shifted the weight of her gun slightly. The lights came quickly now. They streamed by, creating a flickering, strobing pattern of light in the dim cabin. He knew. He had opened his eye and had seen. It had taken all his strength just to lift that eyelid. He had drifted off to sleep for a while. He was not sure for how long. He only knew he had been dozing. The pain was not so bad now. He had been still for some time, just lying here with his broken body, slanted out of the strange alien chair, his head on the control console, his hand wedged into the small flap by the power control, fingers jammed under the failsafe lever inside. It was restful. He could not have expressed how pleasant it all was after that awful crawl through both the train and the tunnel of his own pain. The train's motion had altered. It still rocked him, but a little faster now, and with a new rhythm added as well, a more rapid vibration which was like a heart beating fast. He thought he could hear it too now. The noise of the wind blowing through these deep buried holes far under the blizzard-swept wastes above. Or maybe he imagined it. He found it hard to tell. He felt like a small child again, on a journey with his year fellows and their old quirl mentor, rocked to sleep, slipping in and out of a dozing, happy sleep. He kept thinking,
"I have done all I could. Perhaps not enough, but it was all I had in my power to do."
It was comforting. Like the ebbing pain, it eased him. Like the rocking of the train, it soothed him. He closed his eye again. There was comfort in the darkness, too. He had no idea how far along he was, and was starting to think it did not matter. Things were beginning to drift away from him again. He was just beginning to forget why he was doing all this, but that didn't matter either. It was done. So long as he didn't move, nothing mattered. Nothing. Nothing at all.
The doors were jammed all right, same as the other train. The drone became exasperated and slammed against one of the reactor chamber doors with a force field, knocking itself back through the air with the reaction. The door wasn't even dented.
Uh-oh.
Back to the crawlways and cable runs. Unahar Klosp turned and headed down a short corridor, then down a hole in the floor, heading for an inspection panel under the floor of the lower deck.
Of course, I end up doing all the work. I might have known. Basically, what I'm doing for that bastard is hunting down another machine. I ought to have my circuits tested. I have a good mind not to tell him, even if I do find the mine somewhere. That would teach him.
It threw back the inspection hatch and lowered itself into the dim, narrow space under the floor. The hatch hissed shut after it, blocking out the light. It thought about turning back and opening the hatch again, but knew it would just close automatically once more, and that it would lose its temper and damage the thing, and that was all a bit pointless and petty. So it didn't. That sort of behaviour was for humans. It started off along the crawlway, heading toward the rear of the train, underneath where the reactor ought to be. The Adiran was talking. Avager could hear it, but he wasn't listening. He could see the monster out of the corner of his eye, too, but he wasn't really looking at it.
He was gazing absently at his gun, humming tunelessly and thinking about what he would do if, somehow, he could get hold of the mind himself. Suppose the others were killed and he was left with the device. He knew the Adirans would probably pay well for the mind. So would the culture. They had money, even if they weren't supposed to use it in their own civilization. Just dreams, but anything could happen out of this lot. You never knew how the dust might fall. He would buy some land, an island on a nice, safe planet somewhere. He'd have some retro-aging done and raise some sort of expensive racing animals, and he'd get to know the better-off people through his connections. Or he'd get somebody else to do all the hard work. With money, you could do that. You could do anything. The Adirant went on talking. His hand was almost free. That was all he could get free for now, but maybe he could twist his arm out later. It was getting easier all the time. The humans had been on the train for a while. How much longer would they stay? The small machine hadn't been on for so long. He'd only just seen it in time, appearing from the tunnel mouth. He knew its sight was better than his own, and for a moment he'd been afraid it might have seen him moving the arm he was trying to get free, the one on the far side from the old human. But the machine had disappeared into the train, and nothing had happened. He kept looking over at the old man, checking. The human seemed lost in a daydream. Zogzal kept talking, telling the empty air about old Adirran victories. His hand was almost out. A little dust came off a girder above him, about a metre over his head, and floated down through the near still air, falling almost, but not quite, straight down, gradually drifting away from him. He looked at the old man again and strained at the wires over his hand.
Come free, damn you.
Unahar Klosp had to hammer a corner from a right angle to a curve to get into the small passage it wanted to use. It wasn't even a crawlway. It was a cable conduit, but it led into the reactor compartment. It checked its sensors, same amount of radiation here as in the other train. It scraped through the small gap it had created in the cable run, deeper into the metal and plastic guts of the silent carriage.
I can hear something. Something's coming. Underneath me.
The lights were a continuous line, flashing past the train too quickly for most eyes to have distinguished them individually. The lights ahead down the track appeared round curves or at the far end of straights, swelled and joined and tore past the windows like shooting stars in the darkness. The train had taken a long time to reach its maximum speed, fought for long minutes to overcome the inertia of its thousands of tons of mass. Now it had done so, and was pushing itself and the column of air in front of it as fast as it ever would, hurtling down the long tunnel with a roaring, tearing noise greater than any train had ever made in those dark passages, its damaged carriages breaking the air or scraping the blast door edges to decrease its speed a little, but increase the noise of its passage a great deal. The scream of the train's whirling motors and wheels, of its ruffled metal body tearing through the air and of that same air swirling through the open spaces of the punctured carriages, rang from the ceiling and the walls, the consoles and the floor and the slope of armoured glass. Quaenoil's eye was closed. Inside his ears, membranes pulsed to the noise outside, but no message was transmitted to his brain. His head bobbed up and down on the vibrating console as though still alive. His hand shook on the collision brake override as if the warrior was nervous or afraid. Wedged there, glued, soldered by his own blood, he was like a strange, damaged part of the train. The blood was dried. Outside Quenall's body as within, it had stopped flowing.
How goes it, Unahar Klosp? Yalson's voice said. I'm under the reactor and I'm busy. I'll let you know if I find anything. Thank you.
It switched its communicator off and looked at the black-sheathed entrails in front of it, wires and cables disappearing into a cable run. More than there had been in the front train. Should it cut its way in or try another route?
Decisions, decisions.
His hand was out. He paused. The old man was still sitting on the pallet, fiddling with his gun. Zogzal allowed himself a small sigh of relief and flexed his hand, letting the fingers stretch, then fist. A few motes of dust moved slowly past his cheek. He stopped flexing his hand. He watched the dust move. A breath, something less than a breeze, tickled at his arms and legs. Most odd, he thought. All I'm saying, Yalson told Horza, shifting her feet on the console a little, is that I don't think it's a good idea for you to come down here yourself. Anything could happen. I'll take a communicator. I'll check in, Horza said. He stood with his arms crossed, his backside resting on the edge of a control panel, the same one Wobslin's helmet lay on. The engineer was familiarizing himself with the controls of the train. They were pretty simple, really.
"It's basic, Horza," Yalson told him. "You never go alone. What stuff do they teach you at this goddamn academy?"
"If I'm allowed to say anything," Balveda put in,
clasping her hands in front of her and looking at the changer, "I would just like to say I think Yalson's right."
Horza stared at the culture woman with a look of unhappy amazement. "No, you are not allowed to say anything," he told her. "Whose side do you think you're on, Perestek?"
"Oh, Horza," Balveda grinned, crossing her arms. "I almost feel like one of the team after all this time."
About half a metre away from the gently rocking, slowly cooling head of subordinate Captain Quaenol Gidborox Stogrla III, a small light began to flash very rapidly on the console. At the same time, the air in the control deck was pierced by a high-pitched ululating whine, which filled the deck and the whole front carriage and was relayed to several other control centres throughout the speeding train. Quaenol, his firmly wedged body tugged to one side of the force of the train roaring around a long curve, could have heard that noise, just if he had been alive. Very few humans could have heard it. Unaha Klosp thought the better of cutting off all communication with the outside world and reopened its communicator channels. Nobody wanted to speak to it, however. It started to cut the cables leading into the conduit, snipping them one by one with a knife-edged force field. No point in worrying about damaging the thing after all that had happened to the train in Station 6, it told itself. If it hit anything vital to the normal running of the train, it was sure Horza would yell out soon enough. It could repair the cables without too much trouble anyway.
A draft.
Zoxal thought he must be imagining it, then that it was the result of some air circulation unit recently switched on. Perhaps the heat from the lights and the station systems, once it was powered up, required extra ventilation. But it grew. Slowly, almost too slowly to discern, the faint, steady current increased in strength. Zoxal racked his brains. What could it be? Not a train. Surely not a train. He listened carefully, but could hear nothing. He looked over at the old human and found him staring back. Had he noticed?
"Run out of battles and victories to tell me about," Avager said, sounding tired.
He looked the Adiran up and down. Zoxal laughed, a little too loudly, even nervously, had Avager been well enough versed in Adiran gestures and voice tones to tell.
"Not at all," Zoxal said. "I was just thinking."
He launched into another tale of defeated enemies. It was one he had told to his family, in ship messes and in attack shuttle holds. He could have told it in his sleep. While his voice filled the bright station and the old human looked down at the gun he held in his hands, Zoxal's thoughts were elsewhere, trying to work out what was going on. He was still pulling and tugging at the wires on his arm. Whatever was happening, it was vital to be able to do more than just move his hand. The draft increased. Still, he could hear nothing. A steady stream of dust was blowing off the girder above his head. It had to be a train. Could one have been left switched on somewhere? Impossible. Quaenol. Did we set the controls to... But they hadn't tried to jam the controls on. They'd only worked out what the various controls did and tested their action to make sure they all moved. They hadn't tried to do anything else, and there had been no point, no time. It had to be Quaenol himself. He had done it. He must still be alive. He had sent the train. For an instant, as he tugged desperately at the wires holding him, talking all the time and watching the old man, Zoxal imagined his comrade, still back in Station 6. But then he remembered how badly injured he had been. Zoxal had earlier thought his comrade might still be alive when he was still lying on the access ramp. But then the changer had told the old man, this same Avager, to go back and shoot Quaenol in the head. That should have finished Quaenol. But apparently, it hadn't.
"You failed, old one," Zoxal exulted as the draft became a breeze.
A distant whining noise, almost too high-pitched to hear, started up. It was muffled, coming from the train. The alarm. Zoxal's arm, held by one last wire just above his elbow, was almost free. He shrugged once, and the wire slipped up over his upper arm and spilled loose onto his shoulder.
"Old one, Avager, my friend," he said.
Avager looked up quickly as Zoxal interrupted his own monologue.
"What?" "This will sound silly, and I shall not blame you if you are afraid, but I have the most infernal itch in my right eye. Would you scratch it for me? I know it sounds silly, a warrior tormented half to death by a sore eye, but it has been driving me quite demented these past 10 minutes. Would you scratch it? Use the barrel of your gun if you like. I shall be very careful not to move a muscle or do anything threatening if you use the muzzle of your gun. Or anything you like. Would you do that? I swear to you on my honor as a warrior, I tell the truth.
Avajah stood up. He looked toward the nose of the train.
He can't hear the alarm. He is old. Can the other, younger ones hear? Is it too high-pitched for them? What of the machine? Oh, come here, you old fool, come here.
Unaha Klosp pulled the cut cables apart. Now it could reach into the cable run and try cutting further up, so it could get in. Drone, can you hear me? It was the woman, Yalsin, again. Now what? It said. Horst has lost some readouts from the reactor car. He wants to know what you're doing.
Damn right I do, Horst muttered in the background.
I had to cut some cables. Seems to be the only way into the reactor area. I'll repair them later if you insist. The communicator channel cut off for a second. In that moment, Unaha Klosp thought it could hear something high-pitched, but it wasn't sure. Fringes of sensation, it thought to itself. The channel opened again. Yalsin said, All right, but Horza says to tell him the next time you think about cutting anything, especially cables. All right, the drone said. Now will you leave me alone? The channel closed again. It thought for a moment. It had crossed its mind that there might be an alarm sounding somewhere, but logically, an alarm ought to have repeated on the control deck, and it had heard nothing in the background when Yalsin spoke, apart from the changer's muttered interjection. Therefore, no alarm. It reached back into the conduit with a cutter field.
Which eye? Avajah said, from just too far away.
A wisp of his thin, yellowish hair was blown across his forehead by the breeze. Zogzal waited for the man to realize, but he didn't. He just patted the hairs back and stared up quizzically at the Adiran's head, gun ready, face uncertain.
This right one, Zogzal said, turning his head slowly.
Avajah looked round toward the nose of the train again, then back at Zogzal.
Don't tell you know who, all right? I swear. Now, please, I can't stand it.
Avajah stepped forward, still out of reach.
On your honor, you're not playing a trick, he said. As a warrior, on my mother parents' unsullied name, on my clan and folk, may the galaxy turn to dust if I lie. All right,
Avajah said, raising his gun and holding it out high. I just wanted to make sure. He poked the barrel towards Zoxal's eye.
Whereabouts does it itch? Here, hissed Zogzal.
His freed arm lashed out, grabbed the barrel of the gun and pulled. Avajah, still holding the gun, was dragged after it, slamming into the chest of the Adiran. Breath exploded out of him, then the gun sailed down and smashed into his skull. Zogzal had averted his head when he'd grabbed the weapon in case it fired, but he needn't have bothered. Avajah hadn't left it switched on. In the stiffening breeze, Zogzal let the unconscious human slide to the floor. He held the laser rifle in his mouth and used his hand to set the controls for a quiet burn. He snapped the trigger guard from the gun's casing to make room for his larger fingers. The wires should melt easily. Like a squirm of snakes appearing from a hole in the ground, the bunched cables, cut about a meter long their length, slid out of the conduit. Unaha Klosp went into the narrow tube and reached behind the bared ends of the next length of cables.
Yalsin, Horza said, I wouldn't take you with me anyway, even if I decided not to come back down alone.
He grinned at her. Yalsin frowned.
Why not? She said.
Because I'd need you on the ship, making sure Balveda here and our section leader didn't misbehave.
Yalsin's eyes narrowed.
That had better be all, she growled.
Horza's grin widened, and he looked away, as though he wanted to say more, but couldn't for some reason. Balveda sat, swinging her legs from the edge of the too big seat, and wondered what was going on between the changer and the dark, down-skinned woman. She thought she'd detected a change in their relationship, a change which seemed to come mostly from the way Horza treated Yalsin. An extra element had been added. There was something else determining his reactions to her, but Balveda couldn't pin it down. It was all quite interesting, but it didn't help her. She had her own problems anyway. Balveda knew her own weaknesses, and one of them was troubling her now. She really was starting to feel like one of the team. She watched Horza and Yalsin arguing about who should accompany the changer if he came back down into the command system after a return to the clear air turbulence, and she could not help but smile unseen at them. She liked the determined, no-nonsense woman, even if her regard was not returned, and she could not find it in her heart to think of Hawser as implacably as she ought. It was the culture's fault. It considered itself too civilized and sophisticated to hate its enemies. Instead, it tried to understand them and their motives, so that it could outthink them and so that, when it won, it would treat them in a way which ensured they would not become enemies again. The idea was fine as long as you didn't get too close, but once you had spent some time with your opponents, such empathy could turn against you. There was a sort of detached, non-human aggression required to go along with such mobilized compassion, and Balveda could feel it slipping away from her. Perhaps she felt too safe, she thought. Perhaps it was because now there was no significant threat. The battle for the command system was over. The quest was petering out. The tension of the past few days disappearing. Zoxal worked quickly. The laser's thin, attenuated beam buzzed and fussed at each wire, turning each strand red, yellow, and white. Then, as he strained against them, parted each one with a snap. The old man at the adherent's feet stirred, moaned. The faint breeze had become a strong one. Dust was blowing under the train and starting to swirl around Zoxal's feet. He moved the laser to another set of wires, only a few to go. He glanced toward the nose of the train. There was still no sign of the humans or the machine. He glanced back the other way, over his shoulder, toward the train's last carriage and the gap between it and the tunnel mouth, where the wind was whistling through. He could see no light, still hear no noise. The current of air made his eye feel cold. He turned back and pointed the laser rifle at another set of wires. The sparks were caught in the breeze and scattered over the station floor and across the back of Avager's suit.
Typical. Me doing all the work as usual, thought Unaha Klosp.
It hauled another bunch of cables out of the conduit. The wire run behind it was starting to fill up with cut lengths of wire, blocking the route the drone had taken to get to the small pipe it was now working in.
It's beneath me. I can feel it. I can hear it. I don't know what it's doing, but I can feel. I can hear. And there's something else. Another noise.
The train was a long, articulated shell in some gigantic gun, a metal scream in a vast throat. It rammed through the tunnel like a piston in the biggest engine ever made, sweeping round the curves and into the straights, lights flooding the way ahead for an instant, air pushed ahead of it like its howling, roaring voice for kilometres. Dust lifted from the platform, made clouds in the air. An empty drink container rolled off the pallet where Avager had been sitting and clattered to the floor. It started rolling along the platform toward the nose of the train, hitting off the wall a couple of times. Zoxal saw it. The wind tugged at him, the wires parted. He got one leg free, then another. His other arm was out, and the last wires fell away. A piece of plastic sheeting lifted from the pallet like some black, flat bird and flopped onto the platform, sliding after the metal container, now halfway down the station. Zoxal stooped quickly, caught Avager around the waist and, with the man held easily in one arm and the laser in his other hand, ran back down the platform toward the wall beside the blocked tunnel mouth, where the wind made a moaning noise past the sloped rear of the train.
"I'll lock them both away down here instead. You know we can," Yalsen said. "We're close," Hawser thought,
nodding absently at Yalsen, not listening as she told him why he needed her to help him look for the mine.
"We're close. I'm sure we are. I can feel it. We're almost there. Somehow I've held it all together. But it's not over yet, and it only takes one tiny error, one oversight, a single mistake, and that's it. Fuck up, failure, death. So far we've done it, despite the mistakes, but it's so easy to miss something, to fail to spot some tiny detail in the mass of data which later, when you've forgotten all about it, when your back is turned, creeps up and clobbers you.
The secret was to think of everything, or, because maybe the culture was right and only a machine could literally do that, just to be so in tune with what was going on that you thought automatically of all the important and potentially important things and ignored the rest. With something of a shock, Hawser realized that his own obsessive drive never to make a mistake, always to think of everything, was not so unlike the fetishistic urge which he so despised in the culture, that need to make everything fair and equal, to take the chance out of life. He smiled to himself at the irony and glanced over at Balveda sitting watching Wumpslin experimenting with some controls. "Coming to resemble your enemies," Hawser thought. "Maybe there's something in it after all."
"Hawser, are you listening to me?"
Yalsen said.
Yes, of course."
He smiled. Balveda frowned. While Hawser and Yalson talked on and Webslin poked and prodded at the train's controls, for some reason, she was starting to feel uneasy. Outside the front carriage, beyond Balveda's field of view, a small container rolled along the platform and into the wall alongside the tunnel mouth. Zoxal ran to the rear of the station. By the entrance to the foot tunnel, leading off at right angles into the rock behind the station's platform, was the tunnel which the Changer and the two women had emerged from when they had returned from their search of the station. It provided the ideal place from which to watch. Zoxal thought he would escape the effects of the collision and would have the best opportunity for a clear field of fire right down the station to the nose of the train in the meantime. He could stay there right up until the train hit. If they tried to get off, he would have them. He checked the gun, turning its power up to maximum. Balveda got down from the seat, folding her arms, and walked slowly across the control deck toward the side windows, staring intently at the floor, wondering why she felt uneasy. The wind howled through the gap between the tunnel edge and the train. It became a gale. 20 meters away from where Zoxal waited in the foot tunnel, kneeling there with one foot on the back of the unconscious Avager, the train's rear carriage started to rock and sway. The drone stopped in mid-cut. Two things occurred to it. One, that damn it, there was a funny noise, and two, that just supposing there had been an alarm sounding on the control deck, not only would none of the humans be able to hear it, there was also a good chance that Yalson's helmet mic would not relay the high-pitched whine either. But wouldn't there be a visual warning too? Balveda turned at the side window without looking out properly. She sat against the console there, looking back. "And how serious you still are about looking for this damn thing," Yalson was saying to Hawser. "Don't worry," the Changer said, nodding at Yalson. "I'll find it." Balveda turned round, looked at the station outside. Just then, Yalson and Wobslin's helmets both came alive with the urgent voice of the drone. Balveda was distracted by a piece of black material, which was sliding quickly along the floor of the station. Her eyes widened, her mouth opened. The gale became a hurricane. A distant noise like a great avalanche heard from far away came from the tunnel mouth. Then, up the long final straight which led into Station 7 from Station 6, light appeared at the end of the tunnel. Zoxal could not see the light, but he could hear the noise. He brought the gun up and aimed along the side of the stationary train. The stupid humans must realize soon. The steel rails began to whine. The drone backed quickly out of the conduit. It threw the cut, discarded lengths of cable against the walls. "Yalson! Hawser!" it shouted at them through its communicator. It dashed along the short length of narrow tunnel. The instant it turned the corner it had hammered in to make passable, it could hear the faint, high, insistent wailing of the alarm. "There's an alarm! I can hear it! What's happening?" There, in the crawlway, it could feel and hear the rush of air coursing through and around the train. "There's a gale blowing out there," Balveda said quickly, as soon as the drone's voice stopped. Wobslin lifted his helmet from the console. Where it had lain, a small orange light was flashing. Hawser stared at it. Balveda looked up at the platform. Clouds of dust blew along the station floor. Light equipment was being blown off the pallet opposite the rear access gantry. "Hawser," Balveda said quietly, "I can't see Zoxal or Avager." Yalson was on her feet. Hawser glanced over at the side window, then back at the light, winking on the console. "It's an alarm," the drone's voice shouted from the two helmets. "I can hear it." Hawser picked up his rifle, grabbed the edge of Yalson's helmet while she held it, and said, "It's a train drone. That's the collision alarm. Get off the train now." He let go of the helmet, which Yalson quickly shoved over her head and locked. Hawser gestured toward the door. "Move," he said loudly, glancing round at Yalson, Balveda, and Wobslin, who was still sitting holding the helmet he'd removed from the console. Balveda headed for the door. Yalson was just behind her. Hawser started forward, then turned as he went, looked back at Wobslin, who was setting his helmet down on the floor and turning back to the controls. "Wobslin," he yelled, "move!" Balveda and Yalson were running through the carriage. Yalson looked back, hesitated. "I'm going to get it moving," Wobslin said urgently, not turning to look at Hawser. He punched some buttons. "Wobslin!" Hawser shouted. "Get out, now!" "It's all right, Hawser," Wobslin said, flicking buttons and switches, glancing at screens and dials, grimacing when he had to move his injured arm and still not turning his head. "I know what I'm doing. You get off. I'll get her moving. You'll see." Hawser glanced toward the rear of the train. Yalson was standing in the middle of the forward carriage, just visible through two open doors. her head going from side to side as she looked first at the still-running Balveda heading for the second carriage and the access ramps, and then at Horza waiting in the control deck. Horza motioned her to get out. He turned and strode forward and took Wobslin by one elbow.
"You crazy bastard," he shouted. "It could be coming at 50 meters a second. Have you any idea how long it takes to get one of these things moving?"
He hauled at the engineer's arm. Wobslin turned quickly and hit Horza across the face with his free hand. Horza was thrown back over the floor of the control deck, more amazed than hurt. Wobslin turned back to the controls.
"Sorry, Horza, but I can get it round that bend and out of the way. You get out now. Leave me."
Horza took his laser rifle, stood up, watched the engineer working at the controls, then turned and ran from the place. As he did so, the train lurched, seeming to flex and tighten. Yalsin followed the culture woman. Horza had waved at her to go on. She did.
"Balveda," she shouted. "Emergency exits, go down, bottom deck."
The culture agent didn't hear. She was still heading for the next carriage and the access ramps. Yalsin ran after her, cursing. The drone exploded out of the floor and raced through the carriage for the nearest emergency hatch.
"That vibration. It's a train. Another train's coming fast. What have those idiots done? I have to get out."
Balveda skidded round a corner, threw out one hand and caught hold of a bulkhead edge. She dived for the open door, which led to the middle access ramp. Yalsin's footsteps pounded behind her. She ran out onto the ramp, into a howling gale, a constant, gustless hurricane. Instantly, the air around her detonated with cracks and sparks. Light glared from all sides, and the girders blew out in molten lines. She threw herself flat, sliding and rolling along the surface of the ramp. The girders ahead of her, where the ramp turned and sloped down to one side, glittered with laser fire. She got half up again, and feet and hands scrabbling for purchase on the ramp, threw herself back into the train, fractionally before the moving line of shots blasted into the side of the ramp and the girders and guardrails beyond. Yalsin almost tripped over her. Balveda reached up and grabbed the other woman's arm.
"Somebody's firing."
Yalsin went forward to the edge and started firing back. The train gave a lurch. The final straight between Station 6 and Station 7 was over 3 kilometres long. The time between the point the racing machine's lights would have become visible from the rear of the train sitting in Station 7 and the instant the train flashed out of the dark tunnel into the station itself occupied less than a minute. Dead, body shaking and rocking, but still wedged too tightly to be dislodged from the controls, Quernall's cold closed eye faced a scene through sloped armoured glass of a night dark space strung with twin bright lines of almost solid light, and directly in front, rapidly enlarging, a halo of brightness, a glaring ring of luminescence with a grey, metallic core. Zogzal cursed. The target had moved quickly and he'd missed, but they were trapped on the train. He had them. The old human under his knee moaned and tried to move. Zogzal trod down harder on him and got ready to shoot again. The jet stream of air screamed out of the tunnel and around the rear of the train. Answering shots splashed randomly around the rear of the station, well away from him. He smiled. Just then, the train moved.
"Get out," Horza
said, arriving at the door where the two women were, one firing, one crouched down, risking the occasional look out. The air was whirling into the carriage, shaking and roaring.
"It must be Zogzal,"
Yalsin shouted above the noise of the storming wind. She leaned out and fired. More shots rippled over the access ramp and thudded into the outer hull of the train around the door. Balveda ducked back as hot fragments blew in through the open door. The train seemed to wobble, then move forward very slowly.
"What?"
Yalsin yelled, looking round at Horza as he joined her at the door. He shrugged as he leaned out to fire down the platform.
"Wobslin,"
he shouted. He sent a hail of fire down the length of the station. The train crept forward. Already a metre of the access ramp was hidden by the side of the train's hull near the open door. Something sparkled in the darkness of the distant tunnel, where the wind screamed and the dust blew and a noise like never-ending thunder came. Horza shook his head. He waved Balveda forward to the ramp, now with only about half its breadth available from the door. He fired again. Yalsin leaned out and fired too. Balveda started forward. At that moment, a hatch blew out near the middle of the train, and from the same carriage, a huge circular plug of train hull fell clanging out, a great flat cork of thick wall tipping down to the station floor. A small dark shape dashed from the broken hatch, and from the great circular hole nearby, a silver point came, swelling quickly to a fat, bright, reflecting ovoid as the wall section hit the platform. The drone whizzed through the air and Balveda started forward along the ramp.
There it is!
Yalson screamed. The mind was out of the train, starting to turn and race off. Then the flickering laser fire from the far end of the station switched. No longer smashing into the access ramp and girders, it began to scatter flashing explosions of light all over the surface of the silvery ellipsoid. The mind seemed to stop, hang in the air, shaken by the fusillade of laser shots. Then it fell sideways, out over the platform, its smooth surface suddenly starting to ripple and grow dim as it rolled through the rushing air, falling toward the side wall of the station like a crippled airship. Balveda was across the ramp, running down the sloped section, almost at the lower level.
Get out!
Hawser yelled, shoving Yalson. The train was away from the ramps now, motors growling, but unheard in the raging hurricane which swept through the station. Yalson slapped her wrist, switching on her AG, then leapt out of the door into the gale, still firing. Hawser leaned out, having to fire through the girders of the access ramp. He held onto the train with one hand, felt it shaking like a frightened animal. Some of his shots smacked into the access ramp girders, blasting fountains of debris out into the slipstream of air and making him duck back in. The mind crunched into the side wall of the station, rolling over to lodge in the angle between the floor and the curved wall, its silver skin quivering, going dull. Unaha Klosp twisted through the air, avoiding laser shots. Balveda reached the bottom of the ramp and ran across the station floor. The fan of shots from the distant foot tunnel seemed to hesitate between her and the flying figure of Yalson, then swept up to close around the woman in the suit. Yalson fired back, but the shots found her, made her suit sparkle. Hawser threw himself out of the train, falling to the ground from the slowly moving carriage, crashing into the rock floor, winding himself, being bowled over by the tearing blast of air. He ran forward as soon as he could get to his feet, bouncing up from the impact, firing through the hurricane toward the far end of the station. Yalson still flew, moving into the torrent of air and the crackling laser fire. Light blazed around the rear of the train, now heading at a little over walking speed from the station. The noise of the oncoming train, drowning out every other sound, even explosions and shots, so that everything seemed to be happening in a shocked silence within that ultimate scream, rose in pitch. Yalson dropped. Her suit was damaged. Her leg started to work before she hit the ground, and when she did, she was running for the nearest cover. She ran for the mind, dull silver by the wall side, and changed her mind. She turned, just before she would have been able to dive behind the mind, and ran on, round it, toward the doorways and alcoves of the wall beyond. Zogzal's fire slammed into her again the instant she turned, and this time her suit armor could soak up no more energy. It gave way, the laser fire bursting through like lightning all over the woman's body, throwing her into the air, blowing her arms out, kicking her legs from under her, jerking her like a doll caught in the fist of an angry child, and throwing a bright crimson cloud from her chest and abdomen. The train hit. It flashed into the station on a tide of noise. It roared from the tunnel like a solid metal thunderbolt, seeming to cross the space between the tunnel mouth and the slowly moving train in front in the same instant as it appeared. Zogzal, closest of them all, caught a fleeting glimpse of the train's sleek, shining nose before that great shovel front slammed into the back of the other train. He could not have believed there was a sound greater than that the train had made in the tunnel, but the noise of its impact dwarfed even that cacophony. It was a star of sound, a blinding nova where before there had only been a dim glow. The train hit at over 190 kilometres per hour. Wubslin's train had barely progressed a carriage length into the tunnel and was moving hardly faster than walking speed. The racing train smashed into the rear coach, lifting and crumpling it in a fraction of a second, crushing it into the tunnel roof, jackhammering its layers of metal and plastic into a tight wad of wreckage, in the same instant as its own nose and front carriage caved in underneath shattering wheels, snapping rails and bursting the train's metal skin like shrapnel from some vast grenade. The train ploughed on, into and under the front train, skidding and crashing to one side as smashed sections of the two trains kicked out to the wall side of the tracks, forcing them both into the main body of the station in a welter of tearing metal and fractured stone, while the carriages bucked, squashed, telescoped and disintegrated all at once. The whole length of the racing train continued to pour out of the tunnel, coaches flashing by, streaming into the chaos of disintegrating wreckage in front, lifting and crashing and slewing. Flames burst and flickered in the detonating debris, sparks fountained, glass blew spraying out from the breaking windows, flaying ribbons of metal beat at the walls. Zogzal ducked in, away from the pulverizing sound of it. Wubslin felt the train hit. It threw him back in the chair. He knew already he had failed. The train, his train, was going too slowly. A great hand from nowhere rammed into his back. His ears popped. The control deck, the carriage, the whole train shook round him. And suddenly, in the midst of it, the rear of the next train, the one in the repair and maintenance cavern, was racing toward him. He felt his train jump the tracks on the curve that might have let him roll to safety. The acceleration went on. He was pinned, helpless. The rear carriage of the other train flashed toward him. He closed his eyes, half a second before he was crushed like an insect inside the wreckage. Hawser was curled in a small doorway in the station wall, with no idea how he had got there. He didn't look. He couldn't see. He whimpered in a corner while the devastation bellowed in his ears, pelted his back with debris and shook the walls and floor. Balveda had found a space in the wall too, an alcove where she hid, her back turned, her face hidden. Unaha Klosp had planted itself on the station ceiling, behind the cover of a camera dome. It watched the crash as it went on beneath. It saw the last carriage leave the tunnel, saw the crashing train smash into and through the one they had been in only seconds before, pushing it forward in a skidding, tangled mass of mangled metal. Carriages left the tracks, skidding sideways over the station floor as the wreck slowed, tearing the access ramps from the dock, smashing lights from the ceiling. Debris flew up and the drone had to dodge. It saw Yalson's body beneath it on the platform, hit by the slewing, rolling carriages, tumbling over the fused rock surface in a cloud of sparks. They swept past, just missing the mind, scraped the woman's torn body from the floor and buried it with the access ramps in the wall, hammering into the black rock of the side of the tunnel, where a squeezed-out collar of wreckage swelled as the last of the impetus from the collision spent itself, compressing metal and stone together. Fire burst out. Sparks flashed from the tracks, the station lights flickered. Wreckage fell back, and the quivering echo of the wreck reverberated through the station. Smoke started up. Explosions shook the station, and suddenly from out of the ceiling, surprising the drone, water started to spray from holes all along the surface of the rock, beside the flickering lines of lights.